as we look in upon the great old Victorian mansion, we see Jack Flanders and the lovely Madonna Vampira slowly strolling through the gardens of Inverness.
Don't you ever wish that you weren't a vampire?
Oh, Jack, you really are a moralist, aren't you?
Well?
Being a vampire is far more exciting than being an average, bored, trapped housewife.
Yeah, well, that is an extreme.
Is it?
I mean, there's other things you could have been.
Do you want to make a good woman out of me?
Oh, Lord.
Hmm?
Well, just, oh, Lord.
You silly dreamer.
I suppose I am. What do you dream about?
An ideal, which I know I would destroy if I ever attained it.
Doesn't that bother you?
It's very honest, Jack. We all destroy our ideals.
Oh, I don't know about that. What if one's ideal is to become God?
Then you'd destroy that person who wants to become God. You'd no longer be Jack. Oh, let's change the subject. Do you know how vampires originally came about?
Oh, sure. Count Dracula.
Long before that. There was a cult of people who would steal bodies right after they died and suck their blood for the prana. They never killed people. But the peasants, hearing about such things, thought they did it for the blood, so the myth of vampires came about. We energy vampires have come a long way since then.
Well, it's nice to know your roots.
Jack, you dreamer.
Yep.
I suppose you hear that.
Hear what?
That music you keep chasing.
The 50s stuff? No, I don't hear
Listen.
Any. Hey, that's it. Coming from the fourth tower, all right. I'm going to get to that music before it stops.
Better hurry. It's a short single. You have 2 minutes and 21 seconds.
I'm off.
Good luck. You're going to need it. Oh, Jack, I don't know what to do. I can't let it go.
And so once again, Jack Flanders takes to the hollow walls within the old mansion. He races through narrow passages, around hairpin turns, all the time, the clock ticking against him. For he must reach the music before it stops. Onward he dashes, ducking, twisting, digging. Finally, he reaches the mirrored door at the base of the fourth tower. He opens it swiftly, takes several giant steps, and plunges headlong through the oval mirror, the last thin membrane that separates Jack from the tower's interior.
Good, good. The ladder is still there, forming a bridge across that chasm of empty space. 1 minute and 7 seconds left.
Jack scampers across the ladder, up on his feet and up the steps, past rows of glowing torches, torches that look as though they've hung there burning for eternities. Jack arrives at the heavy oak door. 41 seconds.
Wait a minute. It's not coming from that door. The music is higher up in the tower.
Upward he climbs, the music drawing nearer with every step. 18 seconds.
I'll do it. I'll get to that music if it takes my last gasp of breath. Ah, a door.
9 seconds. Jack hesitates a moment before the door, cocks his head, and listens.
It's coming from in here, all right. In I go. What the? A river. Oh, it's pretty big, too. And clear. And deep. Well, this is a fine pickle. Hey, there's a sign over there. I wonder what it says. He who tastes not, knows not. What does that mean? I guess I'll have a drink. The water looks tasty, and I'm as dry as a dog. The water's so clear.
Jack stoops down and drinks of the river. As he drinks, he hears the sound of something approaching through the water. He looks up. And there, skimming across the water, coming in his direction, is a raft, pulled by an old ferryman. Jack stands up as the raft glides to the steps that lead down from the open doorway.
Excuse me, what's the name of this land I've come upon?
The ferryman is silent, but Jack can see a tiny smile on his lips, and the wrinkles about the corners of his eyes gather together in silent laughter. The ferryman motions for Jack to climb aboard.
I guess it's safe. He seems to have pretty good vibes.
and across the waters the ferryman guides his raft. For what unknown destination is Jack headed? Only tomorrow can tell. Jack Flanders has once again entered the mysterious fourth tower in search of the source of the music he has heard while upon the physical plane of Inverness. This time Jack has climbed to a level higher than the time before. He came upon another door, opened it, and there was a river. As he drank from its cool waters, a ferryman came poling a raft across the waters. He motioned for Jack to climb aboard and they would set off for a destination unknown. When asked questions, the old ferryman only smiled, a little smile, and remained silent.
We're moving downstream. But apparently we're making our way toward the other side. Strange country mountains in the distance, and I can see painted temples off in the foothills. I can hear music, but I see no one. The trees are tall, like poplars, but... No, they're more like the trees on the islands of Greece. Somehow the trees seem almost human. They don't look so passive as trees normally do. The whole land is so alive, as though I can feel it breathing.
They continue downstream, the ferryman gently edging the raft closer and closer to the opposite bank. The vegetation along the riverbank appears to become thicker as they move downstream. Finally, the ferryman heads his raft directly into a tall row of reeds. They part before the blunt bow, and with a final heave, the ferryman pushes through, and there they are, in a narrow channel. There's vines crisscrossing overhead with enormous tubular flowers hanging down, swaying in the soft breeze. These giant jungle flowers have great petals that gently brush Jack's face as they pass beneath. The scents radiating from the petals are thick, lush, exotic, stirring feelings that easily cloud his alertness. He finds himself relaxing, slowly turning himself over to a beauty that overpowers his every sense. Finally, the channel opens and there is a lake. Or is it merely a pool? So intoxicated by his senses, Jack no longer knows or cares to know.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Life is but a dream.
The old ferryman stops poling his raft. They float there in silence. Jack begins to revive from his dreamy state, for there is something in the air. Anticipation, yes, but they are waiting for someone. And still, nothing happens. They drift closer and closer to the grassy bank. The old ferryman perfectly still, waiting. And then it happens, faint at first, but unmistakable. That familiar song, music from an era long past. Jack is now fully awake. Every muscle is tensed, every sense is alert, ready for action. Yet his mind is calm, almost relaxed, as it awaits to process the data his senses are about to feed into the mind. But what happens next, not even the most alert among us could have anticipated. For Jack looked down at the clear, calm water. For just a moment, he saw a reflection of a person he'd never seen before. And yet was so truly himself, it was as though he'd seen his very soul. For in that moment, his heart had been open, and the next moment it was gone. As his mind tried desperately to bring back the image, he felt his eyes being drawn up away from the reflection. For when he looked up, he saw a woman in a boat of sandal with silver oars floating on a pool of white lotuses. In the bow of the craft stood a beautiful old jukebox, silent, but its colors issued forth rays that touched all within its reach. Jack remembered his dream, where an ascetic seated alone in a cave emanated such striking pure colors that he touched the whole universe. For here, the changing reds and yellows and greens and blues and purples that radiated from the beautiful Wurlitzer not only reflected across the gentle, rippling waters of the pool, but also extended to the clouds high above that drifted lazily in the warm summer breeze. For the ever-changing colors extended out like a brilliant rainbow aura that touched the clouds and caressed their soft underbellies. As Jack stands there spellbound, he can feel the whole landscape breathing with the rhythms of these ever-changing colors. And the woman in the boat, resting her chin on one hand, and with the other dropping one by one into the water the petals of a lotus red as blood. And her lips move, for she is counting the petals as they fall. She looks upon the lotuses that float in the pool, and her glance falls upon those snowy flowers and turns their tint to blue. She stands before him like the new moon at the close of a day, a pure form of exquisite beauty, a crystal without a flaw, tinged with the color of heaven. And her eyes are fringed with long black lashes, looking like rain clouds hanging low to hide the rising moon, undulating as she moves, like a swan, and sways like a flower waving in the wind, for her waist could be grasped by the fist, and her bosom is glorious, like the swell of an ocean wave, while the flashing jewels in which she is covered all over change color, as if with envy at being outshone by the play of her eyes. Jack stands still, holding his breath, gazing at her, fearing to move, for he thinks it is a dream. And for the first time, she looks at him and smiles, bathing him with the color of her eyes. And it seems to him he stands in a pool of color formed by the essence of all blue lotuses in the world. He stands there, intoxicated by those two great eyes. He plunges into their sea and is drowned in it, and the whole world seems to him to be made of lotus blue.